Parsha Vayetze begins with Yaakov's journey from home, from Beersheba to Haran, with all that ensues. And there's a great deal to say with regards to the beginning of the second pasuk, Perek Kavches, pasuk Yud Aleph. The pasuk reads by Yivgaba Makom, which I believe the correct translation is he alighted at the place. Vayalon Sham Kibo Hashemesh, and he slept there for the night, for the sun had set. And on the words Vayivgaba Makom, it is a bit of an unusual expression, Vayivga. Rashi comments, and actually Rashi gives two perushim. One Aderech HaPshat and one Aderech HaDrash. Aderech HaPshat, Vayivka says, Rashi Kamo Upega B'Yericho, Upega B'Daveshet. In other words, Rashi provides examples of the usage of the word Pega with reference to a place, and therefore it refers to arriving at a place, coming to a certain place. Okay. But Rashi says more, Barabaseinu Pirshu, Loshon Tfila, Chazal, as is quite well known, explained that the word Vayifga here is an expression of Tfila. Kemo quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, Va'al Tifkabi, Hashem says to the Navi, which means don't daven to me for them in that particular situation. Okay. Vilamadnu. We learn from this, Shetikin Tfilas Arvis, that Yaakov instituted Tfilas Arvis. Now Rashi's source is from the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, and Daf Kafvav Amud Beis, and it's very interesting to consider the words of the Gemara in this respect, and then compare them with Rashi's words, and we'll see the two do not entirely move in tandem one with the other, for reasons that hopefully we will explain. As is quite well known, the Gemara connects each of the three daily tefillos to one of the avos, beginning with Avram. Avram, says the Gemara, instituted tefillas shachris, as the pasuk says in Parshas Vayera, Vayashkem Avram baboker, Vayashkem, that's shachris, hashkama even, elamokom asher omad sham. And the word omad, says the Gemara, is an expression of tefillah. It quotes a pasuk in Tehillim with regards to Pinchas, vayamud Pinchas vayufalel. So the usage of the word omad there tells us, that's the marker with regards to Avram, that Avram instituted shachris. Moving on, Yitzhak, tikein tefillas mincha. Where do we see a connection between Yitzhak and mincha? The pasuk says, in Parshas Chayei Sarah, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh lifnos erev. Yitzchak went out lasuach to speak, sicha, in the field, says the Gemara. Sicha is an expression of tefillah, tefillah la'oni ki yatov, v'lefnei Hashem yishboch sicha. So that's Mincha and Yitzchak. And with regards to Yaakov, as we just mentioned, Yaakov instituted Arvis, vayivka b'makom, Pigia is an expression of tefillah, as it says, Va'al tifka bi. So those are the three tefillos, each one associated, connected with what with one of the avos. What's very interesting is, if we then look at Rashi, and we're full of expectation because we know the Gemara, and we see Rashi's comments on each of those particular psukim, we will see that he does not explain any of them in a uniform way. In this regard, beginning at the beginning, if we look at Rashi in Parshas Vayera, Elamoka Masha Omacham, we will find that Rashi doesn't say anything. So there is no entry into Rashi's perush of this idea that Amida and Avram is instituting shachris. Rashi lets it go. When it comes to Mincha, when it comes to Yitzchak, so the pasuk in Parshas Chayei Sarah, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh, Rashi comments. And Rashi says, Lasuach, Lashon Tfilah. You may be wondering what the word Lasuach means. I'll tell you, it's an expression of Tfilah. Kemo Yishboch Sicho, the Pasuk quoted by the Gemara. So Rashi there does mention and explain that the Pasuk there is referring to Tfilah, but even there, he leaves it at that, as if to say, Lasuach means Tfilah. And anything else? Nothing else. Even though the Gemara derived from this, the Yitzchak instituted Tfilas Mincha for all future generations, Rashi doesn't talk about it. And here, in the beginning of Vayetze, Rashi gives us finally the whole thing. Vayivka is the Lashon of Tfilah, and we learn from here that Yaakov is Metaken Tfilas Arvis. So that's very interesting to consider why it is. It's almost like it reaches a crescendo, right? From the first time saying nothing, to the second time mentioning an expression of Tfilah, to the third time Tfilah, plus it's instituting the relevant Tfilah on a regular basis. Well, clearly, the explanation of Rashi's approach here will be rooted in the fact that Rashi's goal is very different than that of the Gemara. The Gemara's goal is to provide you the historical basis of the Avos and the Tfilas. And moreover, the Gemara therefore will use the methodology of Drash in order to do so. And it does, whether for Amida of Avram, Sicha of Yitzchak, and Pegia of Yaakov. That's the Gemara's job there, to give us the background to the three Tfilas. Rashi's job is not to give us the background to anything. Rashi's job is to explain the Psukim. More specifically, to resolve pshat issues in the Pasuk. If there's nothing in the Pasuk which raises a flag of derech pshat, Rashi won't get involved. As we've mentioned many times, Rashi doesn't limit himself to pshat responses. He will sometimes bring in agoda and drash to respond, but he'll only ever respond to a pshat issue. If there's nothing in the Pasuk which says parsheni al derech pshat, so then Rashi doesn't comment. It's only when the Pasuk says parsheni, then Rashi says hineni. And therefore, if we consider in terms of pshat the relevant psukim, perhaps we can get an appreciation, at least in a general sense, of Rashi's approach. The first pasuk with regards to Avram states, by Ashkem Avram Baboker, El Amakom Asher Amad Shal Mifnei Hashem. There isn't really anything in the pasuk which seems out of order or anomalous, or it needs an explanation. We would ourselves understand. And we know that when it says Asher Amad Shal, it was in Tfilah. That's rather different than saying that the word omeid is an expression of tefillah. That far one doesn't need to go. Asher amad sham es b'nei Hashem, during which time he offered his tefillah for Sodom, etc. Especially as, and this is a parenthetical comment, but it's very interesting, the pasuk never says that Avram davened in the morning. The pasuk says he got up in the morning to the place where he was omeid sham lefnei Hashem yesterday afternoon, because it was already lifnos erev when the malachim came to Sodom. So there's yet more that needs to be said to even make the association of his Amida yesterday afternoon with his Hashkama this morning and reach the result that he was davening Shachris. But the Gemara does it, but Rashi doesn't need to go anywhere near there. And Rashi therefore says nothing. When it comes to the case of Yitzchak, there is room. There is room to comment, because the words themselves, one could only imagine what they mean. By Yetze, Yitzchak lasuach basada, you translate that literally. Yitzchak went to converse in the field. To converse to whom? About what? I mean, that is very clearly requires resolution, requires some type of explanation, and therefore Rashi says it's an expression of tefillah, and that is certainly required. Rashi comments. But in light of all this, perhaps we may then ask, well, what about our pasuk, where Rashi said more than ever before? And the pasuk says, Vayitka v'makom, and Rashi says, you know, Chazal say that it's an expression of tefillah, and it's ma'ariv. And our question is, well, did Rashi need to say something? Is there anything in the pasuk that requires resolution? Especially as Rashi has already preceded and given us a peirush al derech hapshat, that Vayitka means he arrived at a place. And he quoted precedent for that in the pasuk. Pegabi Yericho, etc. Why then would Rashi feel the need, so to speak, to supplement this with the Perush of Rabbeinu that the reference is to Arvis? Well, One could say, balabatishli, that Rashi was not happy with the word vayivka completely as an expression of arriving. I mean, you never find this expression elsewhere in the Chumash, at least. And moreover, there's other ways to say that he arrived somewhere. And therefore, a full resolution, Rashi yet feels, there's room to add, as an element of his perush, the words of Chazal, that it's an expression of tefillah. But there is another point, which is mentioned by Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mizrahi, the preeminent Perush, Mefarish on Rashi's Perush. And that is, Vayifga Bamakom. Those words translate literally as, and he alighted or arrived at the place. Now that's very interesting, even on a pshat level, because we have no notion necessarily as to where which place this is, where he is. But of course, Bamakom, which is a contracted form of Behamakom, which is the Hei Hayadiyah, the definite article, implies that this is a known place and we know where we're talking about. Well, how can you talk about a place as a known entity but we don't know where it is? Well, Rashi comments, and actually Rashi says that Vayivka Bamakom therefore refers to the Makom HaMikdash, which is the Makom. That's already a known place. From a certain point of view, that explanation of the word bamakom means it works backwards, you could almost say. It's reverse engineering. As if to say, the pasuk says we know where it is. We didn't know we knew where it is, but now we know, so where do we know? So we know the Makom HaMikdash, so that's where it is. And in a sense, you have to like say it backwards, and then that's the place, the known place. It's known now. But says the Mizrahi, that's what Rashi somewhat not fully happy with, vayifga b'makom. Except how does bringing in the idea of tefillah help resolve the question of b'makom? What's that got to do with anything? You shift the explanation of vayifga from arriving to praying, and all of a sudden b'makom works out better. How so? Says the Mizrahi, Rashi's comments are sourced in the Medrash Rabbah, Bereishis Rabbah. And if you look there, you'll see something very interesting. We have a notion that one of the ways that we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with the expression Hamokom. Like we say, Hamokom Yirachem Aleihem, or Lo Aleinu Hamokom Yenachem Eschem. Hamokom is an expression of referring to Hashem. And there are explanations, he is Mokom Mishal Olam, but it's very interesting to ponder, where do we see the source of this idea of referring to Hashem as Hamakom? Is it rooted in Chazal? Is it earlier? Says the Medrash, the earliest place you find Hashem referred to as Hamakom is in the beginning of Vayetze with the words Vayifga Bamakom. Because if Vayifga is an expression of tefillah, then Bamakom isn't a question of location, where he's davening, but who is he davening to? Vayifga Bamakom, he davened to Hamakom, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Rashi suggests, most interestingly, that Rashi brings in the second explanation of Vayifga to resolve the Bamakom issue. It takes on a completely different understanding. Bamakom refers to Hashem as Hamakom. That's a chiddush. I feel perhaps that there may be room to add, because yet we ask the question, of all places, to refer to Hashem as Hamakom, why would this place be chosen? And perhaps one may suggest, based on an idea that I saw in the Sefer Harari Kedem, which quotes from Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, and he also discusses the question of why it is that in some places we refer to Hashem as Hamakom, and what is the connotation? Chazal have spoken, Rav Soloveitchik has his idea to add. And that is, Hamakom refers to Hashem being in every place. And that is emphasized. It's very interesting to consider once again, under what circumstances do we refer to Hashem as Hamakom? Really in difficult circumstances always. Achenu Kavos Yisrael, Hanesunim Batar Vashibya, etc. Hamakom Yirachem Aleihem. And also La'aleinu in a base Ovel, Hamakom Yenachem Eschem. It's always really in a sense in difficult times that we bring in this appellation of Hamakom. And why? So if Soloveitchik says because as difficult as those times are, and in a sense a person is liable to feel somewhat distant, or that Hashem is distant from him. Perhaps he's in a place where Hashem isn't with him. And to that end, we emphasize that even in this difficult time, right, Hashem is everywhere and even with you. Hamakam, wherever they are, Hamakam Yiracham Aleihem, he's there wherever they are with them. Hamakam Yinacham Aleihem, he's there with you. That's the background to using the term Hamakam in those cases, which is also very, very major insight, I believe. And with that in mind, perhaps we may say that Chazal have told us that part of what Parshas Vayetze represents, it's the Parsha of Golus, and moreover, the Medrash tells us that when Yaakov came to the Makom HaMikdash, he had a vision of the Makom HaMikdash b'churbono, in a state of churban. And that's why, in fact, even some Mefarshim say, he took a stone, v'yasim ra shosav, l'havdil, like we do on Tisha B'Av, as a sign even of Havelus. And that, in a sense, really corresponds to what Yaakov is about. He's davening Ma'ariv, Tfilas Arvis. It's the night time, which always has a connotation of times of difficulty and of hiddenness, really, of Hester upon him. In that situation, perhaps we may also understand why this is the most appropriate time to refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Hamakom, because even in a state that Yaakov is foreseeing Churban and Golos, and again, people may feel distant. They distant from Hashem, Hashem distant from them. That's why the Pasuk emphasizes again, Bamakom, in this instance. So these are some comments with regards to those words, Vayivka Bamakom, in the beginning of the Parsha. And indeed, there is more in the beginning of the Parsha that relates to Tefillah, and moreover to Tefillah on a regular basis. For Yaakov, upon awaking from his dream, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, states, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayira Vayomar, he was fearful and said, Manara Makom Azeh, how awesome is this place, Ein Zeki in Beis Elokim, Vezeh Shara Shamayim, and this is the gate of Shamayim. What does it mean that this is a gate of Shamayim? Clearly there's much to be said there. Rashi comments, Zeh Shar Shamayim, it's the gate through which things travel towards Shamayim. In Rashi's words, Makom Tfilah, Lalos Tfilasam HaShamayim, it's a place to which all Tfilos rise up to Shamayim. That's Zeh Shar HaShamayim. And some say, Ramban I believe, that this is really the earliest yesod that we have for the idea of facing the Makom HaMikdash when we daven. I mean, wherever people are in the world and wherever they are in Eretz Yisrael, they all face the Makom HaMikdash. They're facing Shar HaShamayim, all Jews, wherever they are, their tefillahs are facing that place where the tefillahs will go up. And it's worthwhile mentioning here, parenthetically, that the idea of which direction we face when we daven, whether it's towards the Makom HaMikdash, that seems perhaps to us to be a detail, and there's many details of tefillah. And yet, if we consult the words of the Rambam in two places, we will see apparently that it is much more than a detail. It is actually a very integral part of tefillah itself. How so? In the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, and the Rambam discusses really tefillah from its roots, from its d'oraisa roots, and how it used to be, and then through the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the more formulated tefillos and Shemoneh Esrei, etc. The very beginning of the Rambam is discussing tefillah on a Torah level, because according to the Rambam, davening every day is a mitzvah from the Torah, at least once a day. And the Rambam says that a person can daven in whatever language they want, with whatever formula they want, long or short, facing the Mikdash. And that is very significant, because here is the Rambam really in the opening halachas of Perek Aleph, where he is still discussing tefillah as a mitzvah on a d'oraisa level. He has yet to come to the d'rabbanan additions and formulations and enactments with regards to tefillah. He's talking about the d'oraisa tefillah. And he already mentions within that basic description facing the Makom HaMikdash. And I believe that part of the reason why is based on one of the sources of the Rambam, that tefillah is a mitzvah from the Torah. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, in Positive Mitzvah number 5, the Rambam talks about the mitzvah of tefillah, again, once a day at least, and the Rambam quotes as his source, well, more than one source, but the second source he quotes is a medrash on the words Otot Ha'avot, and he quotes the medrash of Chazal, Avdehu B'mikdasho. Avdehu B'mikdasho. And the Rambam explains the words Avdehu B'mikdasho refer to Tefillah, because Tefillah is done facing the Mokam HaMikdash, and therefore Avdehu B'mikdasho is a source in the Torah for Tefillah. Once again, we see that the idea of facing the Mokam HaMikdash is part of the Doraisa essence of the mitzvah of Tefillah. That's not something which seems to be shared by other Rishonim or Poskim, but it seems to be very clear in the Rambam. But it's very interesting to go to how the Gemara discusses facing the Mokam HaMikdash, and as we'll see, there's one or two, or more, in fact, stages in this idea. The Gemara, in the end of the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos, says, Hayaomid b'chutz la'aretz. If a person is standing in chutz la'aretz, yikhav in his libo keneged eretz Yisrael, he should face Israel. Shene'emar, quotes a pasuk. And the pasuk it quotes in the next two or three psukim will all be from Shlomo HaMelech's inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, where it's a long perek, and he says, wherever people are, they should daven here, and you should hear them, Batatish Mahashamayim, Melachim Aleph Perekhes. And it says, yeah, V'espalilu Eilecha, Derech Hatzam, right through their land to here. That's from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Hayaomid be'Eretz Yisrael, if he's in Eretz Yisrael, yichav in his libo keneged Yerushalayim, he should face Yerushalayim. Shene emar, quoting another pasuk from there, v'hispalelu l'Hashem derech ha'ir asher b'charta, the city that you've chosen, that's Yerushalayim. Which means it's really more an issue of popularization that we refer to the direction that we face as the Mizrach. That's because we tend to be in the Marav. But, of course, if you're in the Mizrach, you face the Marav. But it's never really called the Marav. It doesn't have the same ring to it. But, Hayomid Yerushalayim, what if he's in Yerushalayim? How does he face? Yichav in his libo keneged beis hamikdash. Shenemar, as it says, v'hispalilu el abayis hazeh. And what if he's in the beis hamikdash? I mean, where does he face then? Still, yichav in his libo keneged beis kodesh hakodashim. It's ever focusing inwards to that epicenter of the kodesh hakodashim. Okay, and then the Gemara concludes by asking, but you see, nimzu kol Yisrael mechav in his libo lemakom echad. It turns out the entire Jewish people are facing one place, and as the Vilna Gaon states in his Perek Tashir Hashirim, that's not just it happens to be the result. That's the goal. The goal is the entire Jewish people should be facing in one place. It's good for the Jewish people to be all facing in the same direction. Amar Rabbi Avin, Bitem Rabbi Avina, Rabbi Avin says, my craw, what's the pasuk where we kind of get this idea from that everybody faces the same direction? He quotes a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ki Migdal David Savarech, Banoi Letalpiyot. Banoi Letalpiyot. What does Banoi Letalpiyot mean? Well, the Gemara darshens the word talpiot to say, tel shopopios ponimbo. Talpiot, tel piot, the hill that all mouths face. Tel shopopiot ponimbo. So that is the Gemara. So we begin with all of our psukim, and you're getting inwards, and we conclude with a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And what captures the attention of a number of Mefarshim is it's a very interesting way to end the Gemara's discussion. I mean, if we've been paying attention, we have basically been quoting Psukim the whole time. In every stage. From Chutz La'aretz to Israel, a Pasuk. Israel to Yerushalayim, Pasuk. Yerushalayim to Beis HaMikdash, Pasuk. Mikdash to Kodesh HaKadoshim, Pasuk. And then the Gemara says, Mikra, what's the source for this idea? Have you not been listening? We've gone through half of Nach already. And in the end, we're wondering, is there a pasuk to support that idea? I should think so. There's about five. We've mentioned them. It's a very basic question. What's the Gemara looking for at the very end? Moreover, we should know, this is not so well known, I don't think, because it's in a different corner of Shas. But elsewhere, in Maseches Bava Basra, and Daf Kaf Hei, if you look there, you will find something surprising. And that is, there were sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud who did not face towards the Mokam HaMikdash during their tefillos. Some felt that there's one opinion which says you can face whichever way you want, except for east. I mean, the Mizrach did not become popular through Rav Sheshet. You can face whichever way you want, just not east. Some were particular to face west. Shechina b'marav. As Meiri explains, there was a certain sensitivity. It shouldn't be give the impression that they're praying in the direction of the rising sun. So they would turn their backs on the sun. What about Makom HaMikdash? No mention. And Tosas point out, clearly they are in disagreement with everything that we just said and are facing the Mikdash. Well, they're entitled to disagree with the Gemara, because they're in the Gemara. Except how can they disagree with the Shlomo HaMelech? How can they disagree with the psukim that were brought? Shlomo says, Derech HaTzam, Derech HaIr. It's one thing for a rabbi in the Mishnah to argue with another rabbi in the Mishnah. He can't argue with someone in the Novi, with Shlomo HaMelech. I mean, those are psukim. So how are we to understand that? And there are two, from what I have seen, classic responses to this. And the first comes from the Netziv. The Netziv in his Tshuvas, Sheilos HaTshuvas, Meshiv Dover, in Simen Yud. And he explains that, of course, there is no question that these rabbis would not argue with the Psukim of Shlomo HaMelech. But the very interesting Shaila is, what do those Psukim mean? Shlomo HaMelech is describing they should pray Derech Artsam, through their land. They should pray Derech HaIr, so it should come through the city, etc. and so forth, to the Beis HaMikdash and Kodesh HaKadosh. But what does that mean? What does that mean that their tefillahs should go that way? Does that mean necessarily that they need to be facing that way? Well, possibly, but not necessarily. It could very well be that the meaning is, because Shlomo only describes the psukim, they travel that way. Maybe it's enough for them to have in mind. Yichavnu es libam, in fact, as the Gemara says. Maybe they should have the intention that that's how their tefillahs should go. Whichever direction physically they're davening, or they're facing when they're davening, their intention should be this tefillah should go Derech Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Beit HaMikdash. But there's not necessarily an insistence that they'd physically be facing in that direction. That's a very interesting possibility. Now, there is no question that the Gemara in Brachos that we quoted at length clearly understands that you're facing the same direction. But the question remains, how do you know? Where do you see it? Says the Netziv, that is the intent of the Gemara's final question. My Krah. What is your source in the Pasuk? Meaning, we've heard all your Pasukim, but your Pasukim aren't necessarily talking about which way you're facing. That's just how you intend that tefillahs should travel. But how do we know that you physically should be facing in that direction? It's not explicitly mentioned in those Pasukim. And indeed, the Gemara therefore has to bring the final Pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Banoi L'Tal Piyot. Tel Shekol Pios Ponimbo. All mouths face that direction. That's as physical as you can get. And therefore, that's the pasuk that, in a sense, clinches it. But that's a drasha on Shir HaShirim. But you need it. Moreover, those other sages in Maseches Bava Basra would face in the other direction, so they take issue on that final drasha, in which case they understand those psukim as being, have in mind that it should go there, whichever way you're facing. So to summarize, the approach of the Netziv on this very basic question is, in terms of Shlomo HaMelech's psukim, there are still two ways to understand them. It's about intention or physically facing in that direction. Hard to tell from the psukim. You need that final pasuk of Tel Shekol Pios Ponimbo to subscribe to that in order to get the result that everyone is physically facing in that direction. Another explanation, also from Volozhin, and this time from Reb Zalman of Volozhin. Reb Zalman of Volozhin was the younger brother of Reb Chaim of Volozhin. There were five brothers, I believe. Reb Zalman was the youngest, and he was a very exceptional person, devoted Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He just never stopped learning. Unfortunately, he passed away relatively young. But we have some Divrei Torah from him, and Reb Zalman of Volozhin says something very interesting. Again, our question is, You've quoted blow by blow the psukim from Shlomo HaMelech, Chutzlaretz, to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to the Makom HaMikdash. What more could you be asking for? And why do you need that final pasuk at the end of Banoi LeTalpiot? What hasn't been said yet? Well, said Rav Zalman, it's true. The psukim are clear as they can be. But there's just one thing. Those psukim were said by Shlomo HaMelech in the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, that being the case, there is room to wonder whether this whole idea is only true when there is a Beis HaMikdash. As if to say, Derech Ha'ir, Derech HaMakom, the Beis HaMikdash is just being set up. Maybe the Beis HaMikdash needs to exist, to be standing, in order for the whole facing from wherever people are to be true. Well, we see the halacha is not that way. We see the halacha is even nowadays when there's temporarily no Beit HaMikdash, we still face inwards. But the question is, well, where is that coming from? Is it from Shlomo HaMelech? We don't know. Because he's talking about when the Beit HaMikdash is there. We're talking about when there's no Beit HaMikdash. You still face inwards? And if so, how do you know? And that, said Rav Zalman, is the question of the Gemara. My crop. What's the pasuk that tells you even at a time of Korban? And to that end, the Gemara brings the pasuk, Banui letalpiot, tail shekolpios ponim bo. Tail is a hill. And the point of the pasuk is, even if there's only the hill there, the only the mountain, and nothing on the mountain, even if it's just the tail, because there's no Beis HaMikdash, still kolpios ponim bo. That's what we needed to hear from that final pasuk in the Gemara, and again, it's disputed by those in Bavra Basra, and they hold that nowadays, when there's no Beit HaMikdash, one can face wherever, because Shlomo HaMelech's psukim do not apply. But of course, the halacha is in accordance with Tel Shel Kopios Ponimbus. So these are the two classic approaches to understanding the progression of those psukim, and it all comes back, as we said, the earliest mention of this idea, the old tefillahs converge upon that epicenter of the Makom HaMikdash is Zer HaShar HaShamayim. And perhaps one could, even in that vein, adduce support for the tail idea by once again reminding ourselves that Yaakov Avinu sees and encounters the Makom HaMikdash at a time of Churban, as we said from the Medrash. And still he says it's Shar HaShamayim, which again further corroborates the idea that even when there's only a tail, once all the tefillahs still go through that point. Okay, so we move on to the birth of the Shvatim, and there's really a fascinating question that comes out again through a Rashi with the birth of Levi. And that is in Perek Kaftes Pasuk Lamed Dalet. We're skipping over a few things. Yaakov Avinu gets married twice. And in Perek Kaftes Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Pasuk Lamedalev. Vatahar Od Vatelet. Bain, this is Leah, and Leah has had already Reuven and Shimon, and now conceives again, and she bears a son, Vatoma, and she says, Ata hapam yilave ishi elai. Now my husband will accompany me. Kioladati lo shloshabanim. And therefore she called him Levi. Alkein karashimo Levi. Well, the Pasuk says kara in the masculine, and the Pasuk talk about that, but it's based on yilave ishi elai. With a third son, my husband will accompany me. And the question is, what is the connection between one and the other? She's had Reuven, she's had Shimon, they've had their contributions, and with Levi, the third son, now things will be different. Yilave ishi elai. In what capacity will Yaakov accompany Leah? Well, you should know, al derech hapshat, and there are Mepharshim who are the Rodfe HaPshat, the Radak, we have the Radak in Chumash Bereishis, and also the Chizkuni say very simply, a woman only has two arms. And therefore, as long as she has two children, she can hopefully somehow take care of both of them. But with a third child, she's run out of arms. And therefore, with number three, she's going to need someone else to help. And therefore, ata hapam, with three, her arms are outnumbered by her children, and ata hapam yilave ishi elai. So says read that. Okay. Rashi, based on the Medrash, says something else. Hapami lave ishi, says Rashi. Things are different now. With the third child, things will be different between her and Yaakov. Why? Lefishe ha'imos nevios hayu. The imos were prophetesses, nevios. The yodos shiyud be'shvatim yodzim miYaakov. They knew that Yaakov would have 12 shvatim. The arba noshim yisa, and he would have 4 wives. And therefore, doing the math, 12 by 4, Amra me'ata eino pischon pe'alai, and therefore she says now the Yaakov can never have any feeling that I was did less than my share. Shari notal tiko chelki bebanim, I produced my share of the shvatim. That was a milestone here. So these words of Rashi commenting on the Medrash are very interesting for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's interesting to consider, we say that the Imoras were nevios, so they knew. And yet, as much as they knew, just to understand how there were certain things they knew and certain things they didn't know. First of all, the idea that they knew there would be 12 Shvatim, that's Chiddush number one. Okay, that's in the future, but okay. It's also interesting that they knew that Yaakov would have 4 wives, because currently he only has 2. Which means that already in the Cheshbon, Leah is thinking that, listen, but there will be 2 others. Do they know who those 2 are? In the event, they're Bilhah and Zilpah. But if you read the Psukim, they seem to indicate that the reason why he married Bilhah and Zilpah was as a result of the initiative of Rachel, who didn't have any children, and then Leah, she saw Rachel, she saw sheep. That seems to be the impetus, which is then... To understand the confluence of what they knew would happen in Nevuah and the circumstances that led them to make those decisions, which are decisions that they know will have to be made anyway, because they know Yaakov's going to marry 4 wives. All of that needs to be understood. It's also interesting that they know how many wives he'll have and how many children he have, but no one knows how many from whom, and therefore that's yet unknown. If it was known, first of all, it can't be known because in the end it wasn't true. And moreover, if it was known, then it's to be expected that everyone will have 3 children, and therefore what's changed? But the point is, no one knows how many each wife will produce, and therefore at least Leah, when she has her 3, so then that's at the very least her proportional share. This whole idea is very, very interesting. But what's of further interest, and is raised again by the Mizrahi, is that here we are saying the imahos were nevios. Imahos, we mean Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velea. Is there anywhere, any place where Chazal have spoken about the question as to whether the imahos were nevios, or any of the imahos were nevios? It happens to be that there is. In Maseches Megillah, in Daf Yud Dalet Omed Aleph, it discusses the famous 7 nevios. There were 7 prophetesses of note, shall we say, in our history. And they are, it lists them. Who are they? Sarah. Okay. Miriam. And those are the only 2 from Chumash. The other 5 are Devorah, Chana, Abigail, Chulda Neviah, and Esther. Okay. And in fact, the Gemara then, coming back to Sarah, who's going to be, of course, our primary focus, the Gemara says, well, you know, where do we see that Sarah is a Neviah? Well, actually from 2 places. Sarah, Dichtiv, one of which we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, for the Pasuk says, Avi Milka, the Avi Yiska. Haran is the father of Milka and Yiska. And Yiska, Amar Yitzchak, Yiska, Zus Sarah. Yiska is another name for Sarah. Why is she called Yiska? V'lama nikvashma Yiska, she'sachta b'ruach HaKodesh. Socha means to see. She sees in Ruach HaKodesh. Shenema, moreover, the Pasuk says, Kol asher tamar elecha Sarah shema b'kola. Hashem says to Avram, whatever Sarah says, you should do, you should listen. Shema b'kola, which is a reference to the voice of Ruach HaKodesh within her. And therefore Sarah is a Neviah. But now the question is, says Mizrahi, how are we to reconcile our Rashi, which again is sourced in the Medrash, with the Gemara, because Rashi told us that the imahos were nevios, right? Apparently all the imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. If you look in the Gemara, you will find that of all the imos, only Sarah is referred to as the Neviyah. Can these be reconciled? The Mizrahi is not sure. However, subsequent Meforshim, and he in a sense, he opens up the question, and subsequent Meforshim present various answers. The Maral in the Gur Arieh, of course, always quick to respond to the questions of the Mizrahi. And Maral says that it could be that when the Gemara talks about who's a Neviyah, and when Rashi's talking about it, it's not the same thing. As if to say, there's two issues. Number one, who has the capacity for Nevuah? Who has the qualities and practiced and acted as a Neviyah? That's number one. But number two, whose Nevuos do we see are explicitly referred to in the Pasuk as such? Even if it's true that all the Imoros were Nevuos, but it's only really Sarah that you see it come out as such, either through the name Yiska, which means to see, which is a very direct reference to her vision, which is very easy then to understand that it's an issue of vision of Nevuah. And also the Pasuk, Hashem tells Avram, whatever Sarah says, to listen, to Shema Bekolah, right? Bekolah, the word is redundant, Bekol Ruach HaKodesh Sheba. None of the other Imahos, we find an explicit reference to their Nevuah. Even though Rashi spoke about it in our Pasuk, because Leah says, Ata Apam Yilave Ishi Eli, he'll be with me. But that, in a sense, that's the result, or based on what she saw, that's what she said. But that's not yet explicit enough reference in the Pasuk to Nevuah, and therefore that doesn't make the list. As if to say what the Maharal is saying is that the list of seven in the Gemara Megillah and Daf Yud Daled is not an exhaustive list of those who had the capacity of Nevuah, the faculties of Nevuah, but rather if there's a further criteria that their Nevuahs received some type of expression in the Pasuk, as indeed all those seven do.
What about
Rivka? Huh? Where, what?
She heard from God.
Where, what?
But the twins.
That's a shame. She acquired of shame. We'll get there in a sec. We'll get there. She went to shame. She went to shame.
Well,
it's right? Well,
it says
here
that she heard from.
Okay, right. For sure, okay. When Rashi says, right, where did she go? She went to shame, and she heard through shame. Okay, Rashi says it. And we're in Rashi, so obviously we've got to be using Rashi's Munachim. So, similarly, perhaps one could say the Marshal. Rabbi Shlomo Luria, in his Perush to Rashi, he has certain notes on Rashi called the Riyah Shlomo. Marshal also similarly distinguishes between Nevuos that were, let's say, for them in their time, in other words, of each of them who would however many children, as opposed to other Nevuos which were perhaps more for the future. Sarah is talking about Lo Yirash Ben Amaz and Bnei Yim Yitzhak. It's about their children, and for, moreover, for all generations that they would never be allowed to inherit together. And therefore, this is actually similar. The Gemara itself, even with regards to the Nevi'im, distinguishes between Nevuos that were needed for future generations, Tutzur Chaladoros, versus other Nevuos. And therefore, it could be that there were many Nevi'os who had Nevuah vis-a-vis their personal situation, but the Gemara in Megillah is talking about Nevuah for the future. The Tzfas Emes, in his Perush to Maseches Megillah, has a different interpretation. Very interesting. He suggests what may seem to be quite a startling idea, and that is perhaps even if it's true that the Imahos were Nevios, but it could be that they attained their Nevuah upon marrying the Avos, who were Nevi'im. In other words, with that union, and that once they were married, husband and wife, that's when they attained the level of Nevi'ah. And the Gemara in Megillah is talking about those that were Nevios, shall we say, in their own right? Not through marriage. They didn't receive it through being married to someone. Now, should you say, well, I mean, if that's the case, then as surely as we're suggesting, that Rachel and Leah, attained a level of Nevuah through marrying Yaakov, and perhaps Rivka attained her level of Nevuah through marrying Yitzhak. Well, then maybe Sarah attained her level of Nevuah through marrying Avram. So why is Sarah on the list? I mean, she's also married to a Navi. Well, says the Tzfas Emes, That's an interesting question. But it's also interesting that if we go back to the Gemara in Megillah, which provided us with sources for the idea that Sarah was a Nevi'ah, it mentioned two sources. It did mention the pasuk of Kol Asher Tamar Elecha Sarah Shema B'Kala. Yes, quite so. Which really sounds, that's about Nevuah. But then it mentioned the second pasuk. And the second pasuk is Avi Milkah V'Avi Yiskah. And we should in any case be asking the question, why do you need two psukim to tell me the same thing? I mean, why do I need two psukim to tell me that Sarah was a Nevi'ah? The Yiskah pasuk and then Shema B'Kala pasuk. Well, says Fasemis, it could be for this very reason. As if to say, the Gemara does not content itself by quoting the pasuk about Shema B'Kola, about her being a Nevi'ah at that time, because at that time she's married to Avram Avinu, but then maybe she doesn't make the list because how do you know she was a Nevi'ah independent of Avram Avinu? Well, to that end, says Fasemis, it quotes the pasuk of Yiska, because she's Yiska before she's married, and therefore she was already Socha Beruach HaKodesh before she married Avram, independent. That's why she's on the list of Nevi'ahs as opposed to the others. Though, I did have a certain thought about this, and that is that presumably, even if we only had the pasuk of Shema B'Kola, we could still see that she's a Nevi'ah independent of Avram, for a simple reason. If she's only attains Nevuah through being married to Avram, it's unlikely that she would surpass him to the extent that he would then be considered secondary to her in Nevuah, which he was. And Rashi tells us, Hashem says, if it's between you and Sarah, you've got to listen to Sarah. Rashi comments, Lamadnu, we learn from there, Shehaya Avram Tofel Sarah ben Nevius, that he was secondary to Sarah in Nevius. How can he be secondary to her? If she only received Nevuah by being married to him, one would have assumed that her status would be commensurate with that. So one could perhaps argue that that pasuk alone tells us that if she is by far exceeds Avram in Nevuah, so then her Nevuah doesn't come from being married to Avram. Although, we don't really know fully how these things work to comment on that, but perhaps a worthwhile question. The final question, though, which is actually raised by the Be'er Basodeh, is on Rashi, and it's about Rivka. Because Rashi tells us, Vatelech Lidrashas Hashem, and he's clearly commenting on the words Vatelech, she's going, where is she going? And Rashi says she went to Shem to inquire when she had by Yisroel to Abon in Bikirba. She's not sure what's it all about. Vatelech Lidrash es Hashem. And Rashi tells us from the Medrash she went to Shem. Why she go to Shem? Because she needs the answer. And indeed the answer is forthcoming. However, asked the Be'er Basada, one of the later Mefarshei Rashi, but she's a Nevi'ah herself, right? Why can't she just ask herself? Interestingly, one cannot ask, as we've mentioned in the past, raised in the past, one cannot ask why did she need to travel to Shem? After all, where do they live? In Hebron or Be'er Sheva? She's traveling to Shem. He's in Yerushalayim. If she's expecting and she not has trouble, I mean, that's a difficult journey to undertake. And what does she need? She needs a Navi. And she lives with a Navi. And her father-in-law is a Navi. I mean, the biggest concentration of Nevuah in the world is in her house. So she doesn't need to go to Yerushalayim. She can just go to the study. However, that is much more easily understood, because important for us to remember, not everyone who has the capacity for Nevuah, the faculty of Nevuah, necessarily knows every Nevuah. It just means they have the capacity to receive Nevuah, but it's not up to them as to what they receive. It's up to Shamayim as to what they transmit to them. Clearly, not every Navi knows everything. Yaakov Avinu was a Navi, but he didn't know that Yosef would be sold to Mitzrayim. Not every Navi knows everything that will happen in the future. He knows what Shemayim wants him to know. Rivka suspects, and rightly so, that there is perhaps, she doesn't know what's going on inside of her, but whatever it is, the answer may be something that is important that no one else in her family knows. And in the end, that was true. Shnei goyim bevitneich, all the news that she gets about her children were things that Yitzchak couldn't know, was not allowed to know, and Rivka intuits that may be the case. And therefore she, in a sense, we would say, outsources to Shem, who is off location, neutral, relatively speaking. He will be able to give her that information. But why could she not attain the information herself? She clearly is meant to know, because Hashem tells her through Shem, so why not tell her directly? I'm not sure if there's a simple answer to that question. Perhaps, again, balabatishli, in order for a person to receive Nevuah, they need to be in a settled state, in a state of simcha, in an elevated state, in a state of peace and serenity. And that was the nth degree removed from the situation that Rivka was in. And she didn't have a moment's peace. It could be perhaps as simple as that, that she was not able to access Nevuah. In her state of consternation and distress, she needed to get to a Navi that would be able to tell her. So these are some of the discussions that surround this very interesting Rashi on the Imos being a Nevios, and I believe there's plenty more yet to say, Mit Hashem, for another occasion. Now, perhaps as our final discussion, the Parsha Vayetze is unusual. Not unique, almost unique. It has a quality that is shared perhaps by just another one or two parshas. And that is, it's a Parsha Stuma. Parsha Stuma means that there are no breaks in the whole of Vayetze. The pages of a Sefer Torah are typically broken up into what we call parshas, not the weekly parsha, but what we call parshas are the paragraphs, either ptuchos or stumos, that is to say the next paragraph begins later on that line or on the next line, but those are the paragraph breaks in the Chumash, and almost every parsha has them, but Vayetze does not. And this is pointed out by the Baal HaTurim, who gives an explanation, but Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says that it's very interesting to consider what the Parsha breaks are for. The Medrash tells us in Vayikra Rabbah. I mean, why are there breaks? Why not just have one long run? Why break it up into paragraphs? And Vayikra Rabbah says that those breaks were there litein revach, in order to give a certain, literally a break or pause, ben parsha la parsha, kedei lisboning bo. In order to ponder and contemplate, what have we seen so far? Beginning with Moshe, it's very interesting to note, important to note, even Moshe, Rabbeinu, had to pause, it was important for him to pause after each section and think about it, ponder and contemplate and absorb it, and then move on. Well, the Parsha Vayetze is the Parsha of Golos. It's Yaakov going into Golos, Vayelech Charona. He moves into a place of Charon Af. He's with Lavan. He's not appreciated. He's taken advantage of. He's not in his natural location. And it's the Parsha of Golos. And one of the symptoms of Golos is that it is very difficult at any point to stop and look back and ponder and understand. Because from a certain point of view, one needs to see the whole thing through in order ultimately to be able to see how things came together. When you're in the middle, it's very difficult. There are things that yet have to fall into place. If you look back at that stage, you could misunderstand. There's many, many things that are perceived as mishaps or worse that ultimately end up in some type of benefit, which by far exceeds what happened at the moment, but you can't know that until the end. And even Yaakov's own experiences in micro, Maisa Ovasim and Labonim, represent the idea. He suffered setbacks, but many of those setbacks led to the building of Am Yisrael in his plan. And again, leaving aside the Nevuah of how many women he's going to marry, it seems from the Pasuk he's going to marry one woman, that's Rachel. We don't know that Rachel would have given him 12 Shvatim, and he suffers setbacks, and he's taken advantage of, and Lavan tricks him. But through those experiences, and then Bilhah enters, and then Zilpah enters, and the result is the binyan of the 12 Shvatim, which is critical, the essential mass of Am Yisrael. Any point leading up to that would be impossible to tell. You look back and ponder, you won't see that much. And therefore, the Parsha of Vayetze is a Parsha Stuma. There's no breaks. From a certain point of view, you just have to see it out. You have to keep going. You're looking for insight, you'll get it at the end. You're not going to get it halfway through or even three quarters of the way through. That's the comment of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, which of course resonates very profoundly. But it is also true that on a certain level, Yaakov, even as he goes out into Golos, his eyes are set on coming back. As he already talks about coming back, v'shavti v'shalom beis avi, v'hayah Hashem li lelokim. There's a very interesting medrash quoted by Rav Zevin Zatzal in a Sefer LaTorah VeLaMoadim. And Yaakov says, and this is the vision of the future, V'hayah Hashem li l'Elokim. The medrash states, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata amarta, V'hayah Hashem li l'Elokim. Those were your words. Chayecha, by your life, kol tovos u'brochos u'nechomos, shani nosen levanecha, all the good things, the blessings and the comforts, eini nosen ela b'loshen azeh, b'loshen shel v'haya. All good things will begin with the word v'haya. That's your word, v'haya. For example, shenema v'haya b'yomahu, yetzu mayim chayim b'yushalayim, v'haya b'yomahu, yosef Hashem shenis yada l'knos asher amo, v'haya b'yomahu, yitfu heharim asis, so all of those nevuas latova begin with the word v'haya. That's Yaakov's word. Except the question is, what is the special meaning of the word v'haya, especially as it seems to be probably the most non-distinct word one could think of, because it just says, and it will be. But what will be? Well, it depends what will be. But v'haya doesn't really sound like a motif word. It doesn't sound like a key word. It doesn't sound like it has any particular flavor or color. But somehow it's the key. And Rav Zevin says a very profound thing. And that is that as a Jewish people, they proceed in history. And in a sense, there's a feeling that they need to progress. And we do need to progress. You always need to move forward. But the critical question is, how do you move forward? And there you could either make the right decision or the wrong decision. Because we have a past, and we have values, and we have a history, and that's really the basis of our identity and destiny as a nation. And as we progress, of course, we can't live in the past. You've got to move forward. But as you move forward, do you move forward away from the past, or do you move forward based on the past? That is the critical question, because one is a recipe for geula and one is a recipe for disaster. The word v'haya is a very interesting word, because actually it is the word haya, which is the past, turned into the future through the vav. What begins as haya, that which was, becomes that which will be, v'haya, through the vav. In other words, it represents looking at the future born of the past, based of the past. And that is why it's such an important geula word, because the geula comes from the Jewish people coming back. Even as they move forward, they're coming back, because if their forward movement is based on their roots and based on the yesodos of the Jewish people from their inception, so with that they can be confident that as they move forward, well, they'll be moving forward towards the geula, which should come in Meher.
Yes, we have a minion.